Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcast or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
The Telegraph. The Telegraph. Podcasts.
Ashes to Ashes. In this five-part series from The Telegraph, we remember five iconic Ashes tests. Two rival players who took centre stage will relive their roles in one of the longest-running duels in sporting history. Ashes to Ashes, Melbourne 2010, with Mitchell Johnson.
I remember Ricky Ponting actually saying, and Brett Lee as well actually said the same thing, if they're singing songs about you and putting the pressure on you, you know, they think that you're a good player. And I sort of started to think like that as well.
And Matt Prior.
You know, as a kid, many people talk about, oh, it must have been your dream to make your debut for England or play at Lords, maybe. Mine was always the MCG Boxing Day Test match. As an event, it just looked incredible. And as a young kid, was always a dream to play in that match.
Jonathan Trott strolls off 168 not out. What a superb innings. Trott has put England in a very commanding position.
Shil Berry, the Telegraph's cricket correspondent. It was the perfect day. Perhaps the most perfect day England have ever had. The Ashes balanced at 1-1. Then Australia rolled over for 98, and England replying through Andrew Strauss and Alistair Cook with 150 without loss. Except the MCG crowd of 85,000 did not quite see it the same way. They arrived on Boxing Day morning to see the Poms thrashed. By late afternoon, they were leaving in droves. Jonathan Trott ground out a huge 100 to set up the innings victory. England bowled Australia out a second time by getting the ball to reverse swing. Melbourne Square was big and rough and abrasive, just like England were on their day of Ashes days.
Ashes to Ashes. Paul Hayward, Telegraph chief sports writer.
Australia had held the advantage at home for 24 years. But with another Ashes series about to start, the doubts were creeping in. The rebranded Australia had yet to settle, and in the weeks before the series, they struggled against Sri Lanka and India. Here's Mitchell Johnson.
There was definitely a lot of stuff going on in the background. We had to stay out of that a bit and just focus on getting better. The team was, you know, it was chopping and changing a lot. There was a lot of guys coming in and out. We'd lost a pretty awesome team with a lot of great players like Hayden, Langer. Brett Lee was still playing at that stage. You know, there's another guy that was in question, I guess. Something needed to change. The system that we're in, there was a lot more cricket being played. There was different formats. You know, there was a lot of talk about guys being rested, the bowlers being rested. So there was a lot being spoken about.
In England, the Test side was flourishing after a period of unease. Peter Moores and Kevin Peterson were cooperating again, and a new era had begun. With Andy Flower and Andrew Strauss at the helm, a series draw against South Africa was followed by a first-ever World T20 win. England were thinking big. Here's Matt Prior.
English cricket, when we flew to Australia in 2010-11, was actually in a very good place. It had been through quite a transformation. Strauss and Flower had taken over in 2009. And we completely changed our atmosphere within the dressing room. Strauss led that change brilliantly in the fact that he gave responsibility back to the players. He came in, I remember it was in the West Indies, and we had a pretty honest meeting, and he said something along the lines of, this is not the ECB's team or a coach's team or anything else, this is our team, and how do we want to play our cricket? And it empowered the players within that room to make sure that we made good decisions going forward and worked as a team, not because we were told to by anyone else, but because we had had that conversation amongst ourselves and we'd made promises to our mates more than anything else. And that then set the path and a very clear goal that we wanted to become the best team in the world.
I think there was a definite change in the way that they presented themselves when they came to Australia, and I think there might have been a little bit of talk through the media about it as well, but there was a definite presence about them. I think Andrew Strauss and Alistair Cook up the top, you know, they definitely had the puffed out chests and sort of gave you nothing really, like they just got on with their game and they were really determined. You could see the determination in their face, and especially at the Gabba, the first test of a series, there was noticeable changes in their body language.
We used to call it brutal honesty. It wasn't a place that people would get away with half measures. Our mates would come up to us and say, look, Matt, I think you could be working a bit harder at this or whatever it may be. And not, it was never personal. We only made suggestions on things that would help the team win. We turned up at the Gabba, and of course, everyone knows the Aussies' history and record there. And quite frankly, it couldn't have gone worse. We won the toss, which was great, and we got bowled out cheaply. You sort of sit there thinking, oh my gosh, how's this happened again? How have we let ourselves get into this position? And Australia were in a very, very strong position. I mean, you sit there in the dressing room, and of course you have the bravado of, come on guys, let's go and save this test match, we're not giving up. But the reality, you can't help, creeps in that, look, this is not often, a match from this position is not often saved. And we went out and amassed 517 for 1. I mean, I've just never seen a scoreboard quite like it. We batted so brilliantly, Strauss, Cook and Trott, that we were able to declare and put Australia back in. I think we got Shane Watson out and Ricky Ponting had to walk out to the wicket and bat again, which I think really dented him as captain of Australia.
Rain and bad light caused Brisbane to end in a draw. It was not a good test for Mitchell Johnson. After dropping Strauss at a crucial point and finishing with naught for 170, he was sidelined for Adelaide. England were rampant in the second test, Alistair Cook with 148 and Peterson with a double century to give the side a resounding win. Perth beckoned.
Ashes to Ashes.
Ricky came up and spoke to me about it and said, are you good to go? And we need you to play and be at your best. And I said, yeah, I'm good to go. So the ball swung around corners that day. And, it's nice when you get into that situation where you can bowl the ball where you want it to land. And I wasn't able to do that at the Gabba. And, you know, to come back and have a good performance was really, really nice to do that for the team. And I think I'd copped a fair bit from the media, and I'd sort of given a bit back after getting a couple of wickets. I'd sort of made a bit of a gesture up to the commentary and the things that you do when you're, I suppose, in the moment.
Johnson's man of the match performance in Perth had seen him take 6 for 30 in England's second innings.
Like many England cricket teams, again, we were on this roller coaster ride of, right, we're the form team, we're playing brilliantly, we're 1-0 up in the Ashes, we turn up to Perth. And Mitchell Johnson got it right just for that one test match. But he got it very right and bowled us out. And suddenly we'd lost the game. And having had a number of weeks, probably from that second innings at the Gabba through the Adelaide test match and everything in between, up until the lead up to Perth, we felt the team in complete control. We felt that we were in control of the series. We felt confident that we were going to go ahead and win more test matches. And suddenly we're on the wrong end of a loss at Perth. And I think that really dented a lot of guys' morale and a lot of guys' confidence, because you suddenly look up and the scoreboard's 1-1 in Australia, and knowing that you're going to the MCG next on a Boxing Day test match, which is, again, one of those prestigious moments and one of those moments that Australians don't like to come second in. So it was all set up for a huge game.
I think we definitely had confidence going into it, but they kept that steeliness in their looks, and their body language was still up. If they weren't confident, they didn't show it, but they definitely were showing that, you know, bravado that we didn't really see from England in the past. And it was probably 05 where you saw a lot of that, and they went away from that. When they were beaten 06, 07, I think they sort of came in with a bit of confidence, but then, yeah, that was sort of had gone missing pretty quickly through that series. But yeah, I think they definitely kept their confidence up and belief that they could do well. And yeah, obviously when they start a test match like that, then that just skyrockets your confidence.
You know, as a kid, many people talk about, oh, it must have been your dream to make your debut for England or play at Lord's maybe. Mine was always the MCG Boxing Day test match. As an event, it just looked incredible. And as a young kid, was always a dream to play in that match. So when it came to it, the team were excited. I personally was excited. We had put Perth behind us, and we knew that we were ready to take the Aussies on again. You wake up on Christmas morning, and the first thing you do is get up and get ready for training. And then we all go for Christmas lunch. The whole team's there at the hotel. The ECB put it all on. There's a Santa Claus that turns up for the kids, and there's... But all you're thinking about is the next day you have got the Boxing Day test match. I was sat there actually next to Stephen Finn, and Stephen had been dropped, in fact, for the Boxing Day test match. So he had just found out that actually he wasn't playing in one of the biggest games, and then was sort of forced to sit there eating his turkey and roast potatoes, pretending he was loving life. And I felt for him, because it must have been very tough.
It was 1-1 in the series. When Boxing Day morning arrived, there was a chill in the air. England won the toss and sent Australia into bat.
Yeah, I guess England saw that there might have been an opportunity with the conditions to really use that new ball. I think there might have been a little bit of grass on the Melbourne wicket, as not usually, but in those conditions, the ball moves around a bit more, and England thought they were a chance. That's why I think they went with the bowl first, and yeah, they dismantled us pretty cheaply, so pretty embarrassing. You know, I think 47 overs or 48 overs, and we're all out for under 100. So, you know, that sets the game up for them. As a bowling unit, we felt that, you know, you can still go hard here and try and get early wickets, use the ball, but it didn't seem to do as much for us as what it did for them. So that really is hard to come back from.
One of the strengths that Flower and Strauss both had as leaders of that team and group was they always thought very logically. They didn't let emotion get in the way. And after Perth, it could have been, oh, we have to change this, we have to change that. We put it down to a bad performance. And if we bowled well, we had an opportunity. We thought the ball might swing a bit, it might seam a little bit, so that we would be able to create chances. But my everlasting memory is the wicket was doing a little bit. Yeah, it was nothing too crazy, but it was swinging. And the Australian batsmen just came out and were just playing huge shots. They just kept driving, you know, loose drives, trying to smash it through the covers and nicking it through the gully. And we just thought, if they keep going like this, they're gonna have to start nicking them. And that's what they did. But as we took one wicket, then the second, then the third, they just kept playing this very aggressive style.
That's it. End of the innings. Lowest ever total in Australia against England at the MCG. Four out for 98.
James Anderson and Chris Tremlett had been masterful with the ball. England's wicketkeeper, Matt Prior, had also achieved something special.
I hadn't even realised. You're so caught up in the game and the team situation and the match situation. I walked off, and I think someone came up to me and said, do you realise you took 6 catches today? And I was, absolutely not. It was amazing to start the morning with, I think it was 104,000, somewhere around there, spectators in the ground, And by the end of the day, there were 10,000 left, and they were 10,000 Barmy Army English fans going absolutely mental. The ground was empty, except for those Barmy Army fans, but I guarantee you they were making as much noise as the 90-odd that let, or as if there were 100,000 in there. You could just feel the atmosphere growing as the Australian wickets fell. The real thing that hammered the nail in the coffin was Cook and Strauss walked out to bat and batted amazingly and finished the day on 150 for none.
Oh, look, it's hard to miss the Barmy Army. They sing along all day. It doesn't matter what the results are, but yeah, there was definite big atmosphere there from them and they really enjoyed it. It's hard to forget the Barmy Army because they're so vocal and do such a great job in supporting their team. But at the MCG, it does echo a little bit, so they sounded like they were around the whole ground. When you're going out for dinner and the boys have been having a few drinks all day, you occasionally get a bad comment, but they'd even say well played or but we're going to get you the next day or something like that. Mm. So it was always some sort of cheeky response. But look, I think for me, once I understood that the Barmy Army were there to take you off your game, it's good banter.
England's travelling support had adopted Johnson for special treatment. After a first innings duck, his time with the ball prompted a song from the stands that would haunt him for years to come.
I remember Ricky Ponting actually saying that if they're singing these songs about you, and Brett Lee as well actually said the same thing, if they're singing songs about you and putting the pressure on you, you know, mostly they'll, you know, giving it to me, that they think that you're a good player. And I sort of started to think like that as well. So obviously they sung the song because I wasn't performing at that time. So the song came out about bowling to the left, bowling to the right, and which was true at the time.
I think our batting lineup was so well balanced. And I think the individuals within that batting lineup were so clear on exactly what their roles were. Alistair Cook was never expected to go out and smash boundaries from ball one, nor was Strauss. But their relationship and their opening partnership and how successful that was always gave us a huge amount of confidence when we started our innings. You're always looking for that calm half an hour when you start. You know, you don't want oohs and ahs and plays and misses and everything else. You want that half, your opening batsman just settle the whole dressing room down and keep that, create that calm. And that almost then feeds on to batsman number 3 and 4 and 5. As they just carried on batting and batting and scoring more and more runs, the ground emptied. And by the end of the day, it was just English supporters in there going, well, Barmy. And then a very weird situation for those England players sat in a dressing room on the day one of a test match, trying desperately not to tell yourself you'd won the test match already. Because from that position, 150 for none, you've already got a 50-run lead with no wickets down. It was quite inconceivable how we would ever be able to lose that test match, but you just can't tell yourself that. So there were a whole load of England players fighting battles with themselves, trying to not look too far ahead.
Ashes to Ashes, Melbourne 2010. With Mitchell Johnson and Matt Prior.
Strauss and Cook started day two on 157 for no loss. When Jonathan Trott came in at number 3, he was still there at the end of the innings on 141. And after his 6 catches in Australia's first innings, Prior too wanted his opportunity with the bat.
I hadn't really felt that I'd got into the series with the bat. I got nicked off by Mitchell Johnson, and I was stood there waiting, having already been given out, sort of thinking, oh, here we go. I think I was on 14 and another fail, not feeling great about myself. And there it comes on the big screen, and Mitchell had overstepped and no ball was given and I was called back. So I thought, all right, well, it must be my day. And Jonathan Trott was batting brilliantly and we formed a really good partnership. And I just remember being 70-odd, maybe 79, not out overnight. And I never struggled sleeping during my career and, you know, the big games. I was always able to sort of park it somewhere and never got too nervous. But for some reason, I couldn't sleep. I just couldn't sleep all night. I was just thinking, how am I going to get that 21 runs to score an Ashes, you know, an Ashes 100? And then you start putting the pieces together from an individual perspective. Say, right, well, if, you know, my dream game at the MCG, the Boxing Day Test match, 6 catches and 100, you know, that is really what dreams are made of. And I think that's probably why I built it up in my head. Unfortunately, the next day came and I didn't add too many to my overnight score. Didn't get anywhere near 100. I think it was 87 in the end.
If you got early wickets, that was your best chance. But even so, they had the backup. They had guys that were stable in their batting lineup. They'd been there for a while and knew their games really well. So you had, Bell coming in quite low. And, you just never felt like you could just roll through them. So that's what Test match cricket was all about. And I enjoyed those challenges about the game. And I know that the team enjoyed those challenges about the game because you want to play against the best. And when you come up against England at their, their strongest, there's no better competition.
At three, we had Jonathan Trott, who at the time was as solid batsman as you were going to find in world cricket. If I had my pick, Trotty would be my number three anywhere. When it was tough conditions, he wanted to be out there. He would never back down. He would always fight his way through because he just hated getting out. He always wanted to bat. So that was fantastic. It's fine by us. Trotty, off you go and bat for as long as you want. And then he had Peterson come in, and what a destructive player he was. Bell, the talent, and Collingwood. And I think it was one of the things that made that team very effective was the runs that we scored down the order.
Trott playing his natural game, and his ability was unbelievable, and one of those guys that had a really good period where he just would score runs, and you knew as a bowler that it was going to be hard work. You weren't just going to get him cheaply. So, you just had to just be on the money all the time and be consistent. And then Pryor playing his shots, it can frustrate you as a bowler. You might be a chance, you might get a big shot out of him, but when you're in form, it's hard to bowl to guys like that because they'll play every shot in the book.
During England's innings, Ricky Ponting referred a caught behind against Kevin Peterson when the batsman was on 49. It did not go his way, and the Australia captain lost his cool, confronting umpire Alim Dar.
I think it was more out of frustration, I'd say. Ricky was, as a captain, was the best I played under, from the fact that he cared about his team so much. Like, we'd be at training and he'd give throwdowns to myself or, the bowlers. He'd be there first and last. He was always there for the team and wanted to do well. So I think it might have been a bit of a frustration thing at the time. He definitely had a bit of a temper at times, but I think that incident came down to a bit of frustration and the way the game had gone. Definitely, didn't go in our favour. Well, he always wanted to win. He played to win. We played a lot of test matches when there was probably, the time to maybe just play for a draw, but we'd always go for a win. That was our mentality and Ricky's mentality, I guess.
The Australians never give up. You always know you're in a battle, whatever's happening, but that's as close as I've come to seeing them roll over. There were certain individuals that had really had a tough time of it. Obviously, everything that went on with Mitchell Johnson's been well documented, and the Barmy Army had completely got into his head. So watching him kind of walk, there was, walking around the pitch and walking back to his mark and walking out to bat, you could just tell that he had, copped it a huge amount and was quite broken by it. And I think a number of them, you could tell that they were struggling, whether it was through form or the fact that they were looking like maybe being that Australian team that had lost the Ashes on home soil for the first time in 25 years. Who knows? But, as I say, fair play. They will always fight to the bitter end. We just had so much momentum going into the final two test matches.
England posted 513. It was evidence again of Strauss and Flower's master plan coming together. Each member of the team had a part to play.
Jonathan Trott strolls off 168 not out. What a superb innings of ability, concentration, technique. Trott has put
England in a very commanding position.
I think my role grew certainly over time from 2009. But as a wicketkeeper, you're always in amongst it. You're always the focal point within any group. Strauss certainly used, and Cook, you know, used to use me a huge amount as the sort of monitor of the culture and just the role of the wicketkeeper. You're the person that keeps everyone going when they don't want to go any further. And it was a role I took very seriously. Little things like hustling between the overs and getting people to build in intensity, because we believed that it wasn't just up to the bowlers to bowl the ball in the right area. Of course it is. You're not going to take wickets if they don't. But we as fielders and as the fielding group had a responsibility to create an intensity and an environment that was uncomfortable for the batsmen. Our levels of energy on the pitch, whenever we were out there, we just gave 100%. I remember touring in South Africa and the comments at the end of the series, what were you guys on? Because we just couldn't maintain that level of intensity and level of energy over the course of a test match, let alone a whole series. So that's where I think we took it to a new level.
The Australians were sent into bat on day 3. After a good start, the home crowd were getting restless again. But it was one of their own inflicting the damage. England's bowling coach, David Saker, a Victorian, working his magic.
Sakes had played a lot of games there and knew the ground very well, so, great bowling coach. In that particular test, we sort of knew that, they would be trying to throw the ball in, getting it to rough up, and, we would have done the same thing, so we just weren't as good at it as what England did. And it makes it a lot harder when the ball is 12 overs old, 15 overs old or whatever it was, and it's still in a hard ball and it's reversing the other way, so it makes it very difficult as a batting team to get through that.
We got the ball reversing. Much is made about the kookaburra that doesn't swing and it doesn't seam, but we were very, very skillful in making sure we got the ball to reverse, because the minute you get the ball moving sideways in any capacity, it's so much more difficult. And it's a team effort to get the ball reversing, keeping one side dry and having the knowledge of how to do that and who shines it and who looks after it. But then you've got to have the skill to bowl with a reverse swinging ball. And to have two guys come into the bowling lineup and perform like they did was fantastic.
Despite half centuries from Shane Watson and Brad Haddin, Australia couldn't find a way back.
Yeah! Oh, Matt Prior has taken it. England have won the game. England have retained the Ashes. Australia are beaten, well beaten, beaten into the earth. The final margin, England winning this by an innings and 157 runs to retain those Ashes.
Now 2-0 up. England had retained the Ashes.
We then got the final wicket, and that feeling of just knowing that you'd retained the Ashes in Australia at the MCG, Barmy Army going absolutely mental, teammates just running, jumping on each other, screaming and shouting. You kind of try and act cool and calm, but just screaming and shouting and the feelings of joy, passion, relief, just all hit you in that one moment, and you kind of forget where you are. You're just in this huddle with some of your best mates, knowing what you've been through to get to this moment. It's a moment that you'll probably never get again, or I won't get again in my life since finishing playing. But to have had that moment at any stage is just phenomenal.
Yeah, they just had everything. They were planned. They had that, the chest puffed out. Like I said, the batting order was, so strong. Like, you just couldn't, you felt like you couldn't break them. Bowling was, on top. So they had everything. They prepared really well. They had their plans. They had plan A, plan B, plan C. They were more prepared than us, and we weren't definitely at our best.
The assessment of Australia was damning. After losing the fifth test, the headline in the Sydney Morning Herald read, "An embarrassment of historic proportions." That glorious last home Ashes series 4 years earlier when England were whitewashed 5-0, seemed a lifetime ago. The Herald went further, saying Australian cricket was in its deepest crisis since the Kerry Packer revolution.
So it was kind of one of our challenges was let's go and win over the Aussie press and the Aussie public. And that's what we did. What we weren't prepared for was as we won them over, how they turned on their own team was just incredible. And all the vitriol and bombardment of abuse that we would normally get was just aimed at their own team. And we knew then that we had won because players like Ponting, who were just taking, you know, and a lot of the time unwarranted, quite frankly, taking a huge amount of stick. All the headlines were no longer about the Pommies being beaten in Australia. It was actually about the Australians and the Australian batting collapse and the Australian captain and the changes needed in the Australian team.
There was a lot of question marks, especially losing a home series. You know, we do perform quite well in Australia. We know the conditions really well, and to lose a series here, you know, there were a lot of questions asked about certain players, a couple of guys being a little bit older, like your Hussies, your Pontings. So yeah, it was a pretty difficult time. I was personally not playing the best as well, like consistently, like I wanted to, and starting to get drained from the amount of cricket that we were playing. But yeah, we definitely didn't have the continuity of same team backing up all the time. It was getting chopped and changed.
I think that to win big series and big games, you always have to have a few things go your way. We definitely had that. I think it was almost written in the stars without getting too spiritual about it that we were going to win that series, particularly after the hammer blow that was Perth and how much that took out of us. To be able to build that back up again and achieve what we did in that Boxing Day Test match, I think it was always meant to be. And a lot of people talk about overseas teams going to Lord's and raising their performance because it's the Lord's cricket ground. I think that's exactly what the England team did that match in 2010. We knew how important it was. We were so determined to be that team, the first England team in 25 years, to retain the Ashes in Australia.
With thanks to Paul Hayward and Shiel Berry, Ashes to Ashes is produced by Kate Borsay. As soon as they're released, the other episodes in this five-part series will be available on iTunes, where you can leave us a review or go to telegraph.co.uk. Ashes to Ashes is a production by The Telegraph.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.